KGMI and the Cascade Radio Group receive financial compensation to present this program in its entirety. Opinions and information expressed are those of the host and or sponsors and do not necessarily reflect those of KGMI or the Cascade Radio Group. It's time to get informed and inspired. This is Saturday Morning Live, sponsored by Asset Advisors LLC on KGMI, News Talk 790, 96.5 FM in Bellingham. Streaming live at mybellinghamnow.com.
Good morning and welcome to Saturday Morning Live. How is it April already? I think I say that every month, but it's crazy. We had a never-ending March, though, because we actually had five weekends in March. One of those times when everything lines up perfectly to do that. So it seemed like March would never go away, and, well, we're officially into spring. We'll see how this goes. You know, we are super lucky today to be joined by a gentleman from Bellingham named Adam Bellinger. Adam is one of, he's an expert in one of his passion projects. Adam, welcome.
Thank you, Lyle. I appreciate the opportunity to come here. This is the first time I've been in KGMI studio since I was probably a child.
Nice. Well, just put your feet up and be comfortable and relax. It's just like we're downtown having a cup of coffee, really, except we've got a couple other people who are listening.
Yeah, I got my hair cut just for this radio.
Did you?
Yes.
Nice. That's perfect.
Wanted to look sharp.
Yeah? Well, good. You know, I always say I've got a face for radio, so, you know, it's one of those things. But, you know, we hear a lot in Bellingham, and we see a lot of drug abuse, and we see a lot of homelessness, and we see a lot of those things. And there have been some efforts made over the past several years. I don't know if I want to call them experiments. It kind of feels that way. One of those is a property down on North State Street at 1022 North State Street that's somewhat infamous, actually. It's the colloquial name for it is 22 North. Adam, tell me about your relationship with 22 North.
Yeah, so I operate a very small business right across the alleyway from 22 North. I share a building with a number of other very small businesses, mostly like body movement art type.
So healthy small, activities.
Yeah, healthy activities. It's, you know, something I do on the side. That's not something I do every day, but being there, sharing an alleyway with 22 North has been a, you know, to put it mildly, very mildly, is an eye-opening experience. 22 North is a permanent supportive housing project run by the Opportunity Council. When they started, it was operated as a housing first model, which means that you provide housing to people fresh off of, homelessness. And a lot of those folks are, you know, in encampments or just, you know, laying on the streets, basically. There's 40 units to it. It's configured like a 40-unit apartment,
right,
basically. And there's part of this permanent supportive housing model is that the idea is that there's supportive services that, you know, wrap around these folks that need this type of help, and it's there to be, you know, designed to get them on a good path towards, you know, stability mm-hmm. in their lives, and you know, and we were sold at least the idea that they were going to be good neighbors, and a lot of there'd be security and a lot of other things mm-hmm. that you know, didn't materialize.
Yeah, well, and let's take a little step, half a step backwards a little bit and talk a little bit about what supportive housing is for people who aren't, you know, deeply involved and deeply passionate about it. You know, the state says that supportive housing adheres to principles of housing first, harm reduction, trauma-informed care, motivational interviewing, person-centered planning, strength-based approach, program participation, medication adherence, and abstinence, though, are not required to keep your housing, right? And so what they kind of say is, look, if we put a roof over people, they're going to get better, right? And it's kind of like, here we go. It's no strings attached. Come here, you know, do your thing.
Yeah. And that's probably true for a portion of the population where it does help. You know, housing is a problem in this community, and there is the segment of the population where the housing is the primary issue that they're facing.
Mm-hmm.
And it might be driven by economic factors, you know, job loss,
right.
You know, limited income, you know, physical disabilities.
Mm-hmm.
But there's other aspects to it that tend to cause, you know, when you have folks, particularly people facing addiction,
right,
or criminal activities, where there tends to be a breakdown in how this model is supposed to work.
Yeah, I can see that. You know, it's one of those things that a roof is great and it's nice, but if I have problems wherever I go, there I am. You know, if I've got a problem on the sidewalk and I'm not getting help, but I get a roof, I'm going to have a problem in the roof, you know. And I really keyed on to something that you said a minute ago. And one of those things is that it's what in commercial real estate we refer to, which is my day job, we refer to as tenant mix. And so, like, you don't put a body work yoga studio next to a hard heavy metal club, right? You know, you don't have a bar right next to it, or you don't have, you know, or you don't put a daycare next to a pot shop or whatever the case may be, right?
Exactly.
That tenant mix. And so when you start talking about supportive housing, you know, you talked about several different profiles of people who may need supportive housing. One of the things that people in recovery will definitely say is that, look, you know, when someone's on their recovery journey and they've gotten clean, they have to change their association. They need to stay away from people who are using, you know, that association piece is really key. But if you're, that's where you have to live, and the people on both sides of your unit are using fentanyl and meth, where does that leave you? That wouldn't happen at 22 North, though.
Yeah. Well, therein lies a key problem with the facility over the years is, you have all these different groups mixing together, making each other's lives miserable and making the neighborhood around them miserable, because you have you don't have a facility that is focused on just addiction or just mental health issues and other things like that.
Right. So in a way, what you're saying is that it would be better to mix people with similar needs. In other words, that tenant mix. So if you've got people whose primary, you know, diagnosis is mental health, if you've got people whose primary diagnosis is addiction, or if you've just got people who are down and out who need a hand, and so on. You're listening to Saturday Morning Live. I'm Lyle Sorensen. We'll be right back after this break.
Get down and boogie as the winner of a new car. It's electric. Barron's Clean Energy Sweepstakes is on now with your chance to win a Ford Mustang Mach-E and an EV charger. You heard that right. Work with the clean energy experts at Barron and you could zoom away in a sleek Ford Mustang Mach-E, all yours for 3 electrifying years, plus an EV charger installed by Barron Electrical. Go solar, tankless, upgrade to a heat pump, you name it. Earn qualifying clean energy points for all things green. 1 point equals one entry. Your 5-time award-winning clean energy company, Barron, is here to transform your whole home with energy-efficient solutions and maybe even your commute. Right now, get a free heat pump with purchase of a solar or battery backup system, plus 16 clean energy points to win that electric car. Find yourself in a sporty new ride and call Barron today during Barron's It's Electric Clean Energy Sweepstakes, on now through June 30th.
Barron, your full-service HVAC, electrical, and plumbing contractor. Our mission, improving lives.
No purchase necessary. Visit BarronHeating.com for details and official rules.
B&W Perks is heading to Ferndale's Cedars Restaurant Thursday at 8 a.m. It's mealtime and you're starving, so what'll it be? It'll be Cedars Restaurant, Ferndale's classic diner and lounge. Why? It's the warm, inviting aroma of home-cooked, scratch-made delicacies filling the air morning, noon, and night. It's the rich flavors that come from over 40 years of cooking with love. It's the temptation of a hearty meal with huge portions. or the option to indulge in a refreshing cocktail during the next big game. It's the authentic taste of classic American diner cuisine served in the heart of Ferndale. It's the irresistible charm of homemade pies and dessert delights. It's Cedars Restaurant on Main Street. So pull up a chair. You're going to love being a part of the Cedars family. Check out the menu at cedarsferndale.com. Thursday at 8 a.m., you can get a $50 gift certificate to Cedars Restaurant in Ferndale for just $25. That's half off at Cedars Restaurant. Get in on the savings while supplies last at pnwperks.com.
The opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of KGMI or the Cascade Radio Group.
Welcome back to Saturday Morning Live. I'm Lyle Sorensen, joined today by Mr. Adam Bellinger. We're talking about Bellingham's most famous or infamous permanent supportive housing in downtown.
Yeah, 22 North, operated by the Opportunity Council. It's been a very interesting time in my life the last 5 years now. You know, the project started, right away with some pretty significant neighborhood impacts. You know, I started pulling police reports and just looking at the numbers, and I know you're a big fan of the numbers about things, and as of my count, there's over 600 police incident reports associated with 22 North, and there's all kinds of crime that has occurred, whether it's the most serious one was the homicide of Cassandra Booker in 2022. It was, very evident to be a open-air drug market, and I think that was pretty widely recognized by both public officials and the Opportunity Council themselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's a little hard to sweep that one under the carpet.
Yeah, and it was very frustrating. Being able to observe all this behavior going on, and it was spilling out into the neighborhood, and not getting any sort of tangible results from those complaints. And they've been going on for, years. I feel really sorry for a lot of the residential neighbors around the building. I've heard personal accounts of, people who hadn't been able to sleep in years through the night. Mm-hmm. I mean, because there's always something going on. At a certain point, I couldn't go about more than 10 minutes without watching some sort of illicit activity going on, whether it was a drug deal or smoking fentanyl, whether it was, people with weapons walking around. I've been threatened and at least a few times, with physical violence, just, being out there in the community. So, I consider myself to be,
I think you can take care of yourself.
Yeah, I can take care of myself, but and I've always felt comfortable in Bellingham, walking down the alleyways, but until the last few years, it's just gotten so crazy, and 22 North was pretty wild.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's kind of like, how do I say this? It was when you put people in a situation like that, really without rules, that are applied in any way, with no consequences, with no boundaries, with no support, right? There's the case management. I've heard accounts from people who've lived there that, the case management is almost non-existent. There have been crimes inside where people have been held hostage by other people. There's, a lot of trafficking of human trafficking and drugs and stolen property and all the things, and you have to wonder if you take someone from the street or you take them from an encampment and you put them underneath a roof and you're not moving them forward in their journey towards becoming a more productive citizen, but you're just kind of letting them do the same stuff they were doing, except now they just got a better place to stay.
Yeah. And for sure, things like staffing at certain points was a very big problem, and people just to even intervene and, even maintain the rules just because they have rules and things like that. But It was very evident that none of those rules were getting enforced. Mm-hmm. And, you know, things like, you know, having guest policy that wasn't enforced, you know, inspections and evictions that weren't starting the process for when those problems started mm-hmm. to develop. I've heard a lot of excuses, but, you know, I don't think that, you know, upon, you know, tangible review of a lot of those excuses, you know, really hold water other than we just need to make sure that this doesn't happen. And we need to, and I think it's gotten to the point where people need to, you know, outside folks need to step in.
Yeah. Well, and tenant mix is important, right? Yeah. You know, I keep coming back to that, but, you know, OPCO does a lot of placement in the community, into supportive housing or permanent supportive housing through voucher programs and other things. And, you know, I've had some area landlords come to me and say, hey, you know, we had to remediate several of our units, you know, and they were people who were brought to us by OPCO, you know, with vouchers or whatever. And, you know, they had to demeth their apartments.
Yeah. And that's, I mean, you could go through almost any unit in 22 North, and there's probably most likely been some at some point evidence or history of fentanyl or meth use.
So contamination.
And there has been at least two units that have been condemned by the county health department for meth that occurred in 2022. I've been personally pushing for and advocating that, you know, there be you know, testing of the whole building by an outside government agency, because I feel that we can't just ignore it, because meth and fentanyl contamination don't go away just because we right. ignore the problem. And
they don't.
No. And the other thing too is that you know, it causes health problems mm-hmm. for the people who are residing there. And you know, I can't, in good conscience, want to see anybody placed in that building
right.
unless I know that those things have been addressed.
Well, and it's back to that whole thing of, you know, I mean, anybody who's been to a rock concert or whatever, you know, has heard the term contact high, right? Yeah. Secondhand drug smoke. Well, what about that? You know,
yeah.
You got people, you know, you got your building being hotboxed with meth or fentanyl.
Yeah.
You know, the odds are you're probably going to be exposed enough to be impacted.
I've been raising my voice a lot in the last few months, and so
you're very calm, though. I gotta
say. I know, but sometimes I do show my anger, and it's hard not to be angry about it. And so I have to, you know, sometimes cool down, so I don't
do that body work and deep breathing.
Yeah, I don't just blow a gasket. But you know, when I tell people about the, you know, the tangible experiences, like, I am, you know, sharing an alleyway with them, so, and I'm downwind. And
right.
So when I'm getting off of my work at my business and I'm smelling the fentanyl and meth smoke waft from the building, mm-hmm. so I know there's this activities going on there.
Right.
And yet there doesn't seem to be any recognition of that. And why is it continuing? And there doesn't seem to be any you know, after hours, especially at this point, addressing of that, those issues that are happening, not just at the, you know, 9 to 5 hours where you got full staff, but then, you know, after hours, things, you know, kind of degrade.
Well, and people in addiction tend to be nocturnal, mm-hmm. you know, and maybe it's because the cover of darkness is better for some of the illicit when they engage in illicit activities or whatever the case. But, you know, I have been around people in addiction in my life at different times, and they very much tend to be nocturnal. You know, I mean, if you want to sometime, if you're go to an all night grocery store about 3 a.m. sometime and watch the traffic. It's pretty interesting. I remember when Hagen's was 24 hours, you know, and there was definitely a crowd that would show up, you know, in the wee hours of the morning in their, you know, flat flat black painted vans and, you know, that kind of stuff. It was definitely an identifiable crowd that was very nocturnal.
Yes. Yeah. And it you know, what was remarkable in 2022 is it became just a 24/7 factor. Now it's gone back to more the, you know, during the night is when you see the signs of the problems around the building. You know, you get the 3 a.m. guy, you know, the drug dealer shouting up to his girlfriend in the back of the building, trying to get her attention because he's been trespassed from the building. But, you know, he's, you know, shouting up to her to try and get her attention so he can, you know, either get entry and deal drugs or, you know, come down and get her down there so that they can do whatever they're going to do.
Right.
And it's really aggravating.
Speaking of that, we have another break. You're listening to Saturday Morning Live, Lyle Sorensen, joined today by Adam Bellinger, having a little conversation about 22 North. We'll be back after this.
Join the 2024 Whatcom County Home and Lifestyle Show, April 12th through 14th. Enjoy a jam-packed weekend full of fun events and inspiration for the whole family. Over 200 booths will showcase all that Whatcom County has to offer in home and lifestyle. And new this year is free admission. Plus, don't miss Whatcom County's first ever professionally sanctioned barbecue competition, Saturday and Sunday. Competitors from all over the Northwest will compete for the title of Grand Champion and a $6,000 prize purse. And you get to taste your way through the event. Bring the family out to Fairhaven Floors Family Day from 11 to 4 with face painting, balloon animals, and meet Cinderella and Spider-Man. Plus, see the Reptile Man, a Lego building session with Lego Masters contestant Brad Bergman, and the Young Entrepreneurs Market. The Whatcom County Home and Lifestyle Show, presented by the BIAWC and sponsored by Judd & Black, April 12th through 14th at the Northwest Washington Fairgrounds. More info at BIAWC.com.
Hey, it's Les Schwab Tires. Right now, save up to $80 instantly, plus $50 with financing for a total of $130 off a set of four select tires. Our spring tire sale is a gift to say congrats, you made it through winter. Now you can swap out those winter tires for a fresher set at a lower price. Book an appointment online today. Les Schwab Tires, ranked number one by Forbes for customer service and auto repair and maintenance. Limited time offer while supplies last. Terms and conditions apply. See LesSchwab.com/sale for details.
Trust. It's the foundation of every lock and key, and it's the reason Accurate Lock and Security has been serving Northwest Washington for over 90 years, because people know that Accurate are the ones you can trust to protect your valuables. From Abloy to Medico to Keymark, Accurate's high-security locks offer a patented key blank that only contracted dealers can cut, extreme resistance to physical attack, and a variety of security enhancements to bolster your protection. Accurate Lock and Security, the security professional team. Online at AccurateLock.net.
KGMI wants to put a grand in your hand. You could be one word away from a chance to win $1,000.
That's right. Just listen each weekday to KGMI for the keyword during the 8 a.m., 11 a.m., 2 p.m., and 5 p.m. hours.
Then go to the Grand in Your Hand contest page at mybellinghamnow.com before midnight and enter each keyword for your chance to win $1,000.
We'll have four keywords each weekday so you can increase your chances of winning by entering all four every day we play the contest.
You already listen to KGMI for the latest local news and discussion of the latest issues. Now you can win $1,000 while you do it.
A Grand in Your Hand is brought to you on KGMI by Niederhaus of Luxury, Whatcom County's newest fine jewelry store, next to Lombardi's on Bellwether Way.
A Grand in Your Hand is back on KGMI.
Get details at mybellinghamnow.com.
The latest local news and important topics of the day from the West Mechanical Studio.
Rest easy in a cool home this summer. Contact West Mechanical Heating, Air Conditioning, and Electrical to add AC to your existing system for as little as $140 a month. Find them at westmechanical.net.
Get the latest news and information 24/7 with KGMI News Talk 790, 96.5 FM in Bellingham. Streaming live at mybellinghamnow.com.
CBS News Brief. Make sure you protect your eyes with special eclipse glasses if you plan on watching the event Monday. Time magazine editor Jeffrey Kluger.
Keep those glasses on. Looking at a bit of the sun peeking out from behind the moon is as dangerous as looking at the sun directly when it's fully exposed.
You need to be prepared for aftershocks. That's the warning going out to those on the East Coast who felt yesterday's 4.8 magnitude quake. CBS's Errol Barnett.
Those aftershocks, while not causing any widespread destruction, can be damaging on the small scale. And this is the most densely populated part of the country.
Iran is vowing to retaliate for an airstrike in Syria. CBS's David Martin.
U.S. officials tell CBS News Iran is making preparations to launch a swarm of drones and missiles timed around the upcoming end of Ramadan.
Two top generals were among those killed in the attack. CBS News Brief. I'm Stacey Lynn.
Welcome back to Saturday Morning Live. I'm Lyle Sorensen, joined today by Mr. Adam Bellinger, talking about permanent supportive housing and drug abuse and death and all those kinds of things. You know, we had a record for overdose deaths in 2023, 136. That's a lot. That's a bunch.
It is.
You know, for a small community, if we take that countywide, you know, with 230,000 people, that's a big number.
Yeah. And there's a couple of those deaths, at least confirmed in 22 North. So there have been a total of, in the last about less than 10 months, there have been a total of 6 deaths. The first two I've confirmed as overdoses inside the building. And then there was most recently, a week and a half ago, a death that was most likely, there seems to be evidence of overdose there as well. So it's...
That most recent one a resident?
No, they were a guest of a resident.
I thought they were screening guests. According to their website, they screen guests with the same criteria that they screen residents before they can be guests.
Yeah.
You think that's happening?
It does seem like there's... and they've had some major problems with their guest policy enforcement, and they've admitted that. And I don't know what's going on in there right now, per se, but, you know, if it was me and I'm seeing all these issues and people dying, I think I'd be locking some things down. And, you know, the guest policy for sure would be one where I would say, let's stop that.
It's like, hey, guys, you know, until you start behaving and following some house rules, we're going to allow no guests.
Yeah.
If you want to visit, go outside.
Yeah. It seems incredibly silly to me to allow some of this stuff to just go on under your nose and not step in and intervene at some point.
Yeah. Well, and the really sad thing about this, and you know, I'm not against helping people. You know, I think that when people need help, that's an important thing. But why should it cost you nothing, you know, in terms of behavior modification, in terms of finances, in terms of all those things, you know? And it's like everything in life has a cost, right? You know, if you're drugging, that's not free. That has a cost. You know, if you're unsheltered and someone provides you with shelter, you know, and what I really hate about the bad placement and the bad tenant mix is that it makes property owners not want to help, not to take those kinds of vouchers. Interfaith Coalition, for example, right? A third of their units in 2023 had to be remediated for drugs, right? At a cost of, you know, probably $8,000 to $12,000 a unit, somewhere in there.
Yeah.
And that's on the light side, but
yeah, and it becomes a problem. And I've talked to some of those landlords too, and those folks are, you know, you want to help. Everybody wants to help, mm-hmm. but when you are faced with that kind of financial burden, you say, "I can't sustain this." And you know, Interfaith Coalition was one of the first ones to, you know, raise their hands and you're seeing it particularly down in like Snohomish County. Mm-hmm. The Catholic Community Services has basically had to shut down a Claire's Place, which is a similar facility to 22 North, a little bit bigger, and started around the same time. It started in 2019, which 22 North started in November of 2018. And they had to shut the whole place down, test almost all the units. Mm-hmm. They found contamination everywhere at Claire's place. And it's just become, and that was 65 units that were mm-hmm. taken offline. Employees were having health issues.
Oh yeah. Can you imagine working at 22 North when they're using a harm reduction model? They're not requiring them to not use, the secondhand. I mean, talk about a toxic work environment.
And there was a LNI investigation of 22 North in 2019, and they were cited for some various safety violations. I've talked to people who've been inside, and they've indicated that if you need to wear a mask to be there because the secondhand
like content, respirator.
One guy said he was trained by somebody with a respirator because he was, and he said you need to get something similar if you're going to work here because it's that bad. So it's not real good in there, and if you don't have any consequences or rules enforced on mm-hmm. the drug use in there, the folks are just going to start using wherever. I mean, it's pretty bad, and I can smell it from 100
yeah.
feet away.
Right.
So
yeah, I mean, can you imagine what it's like inside?
If you're
able to smell it up the alley, up the street, it's got to be insane. And anecdotally, I've had some people come to me and say, their family member was not addicted when they went to 22 North, and they became addicted while they were staying there.
Yeah, yeah, and it becomes a like you said earlier, where you have to, if you're going to really help somebody in addiction. I have a family, multiple family members that have suffered through mm-hmm. addiction, and a couple of that have lost their lives to it. And
so you very much understand.
Yeah, and you can't. You have to pull them out of that. My mom, who mm-hmm. has spent decades, looking after her brother. With other family members, of course, and because it took a community basically to mm-hmm. try and keep them alive, and trying to separate them out, pull them out of that, alcoholic lifestyle, really prolonged his life. It ultimately got him in the end, and it was, that cultural, being able to go back to your old friends and
association, right?
Yeah.
One of the first things they teach you, when you in treatment and when you're coming out and you're recovering is that, look, you have to change your association.
Yeah.
Right. If you hung out with Joe, Mary, and Sally before you went to treatment, when you go back, as mean as it sounds, you can't have anything to do with Joe, Mary, and Sally anymore.
Yeah.
Because you'll be strong initially, but eventually, something will happen. You've got all your old triggers, all your old habits, all your old things. You'll be back doing whatever you were doing before.
Yeah. And so I think one of the main weaknesses of, the lack of security and lack of enforcement of rules with 22 North has been, it's just allowed the problem to perpetuate itself, mm-hmm. not actually fix the issue. I do want to encourage the organizations that are involved in it, the governmental organizations, like, let's see if we can start to break the cycle, because I think if we can figure out a way to get 22 North on a better path, and instead of being supportive of addiction, mm-hmm. which is essentially what it's been for most of its history. I mean, there's times when they've had it locked down, and but it's fairly short
right.
period of time.
And you have to take that. I think you're right. You know, I understand what the theories are. I understand what the best practices are. And you know, those embrace harm reduction. And, you know, we don't want to be judgmental and we want to be patient. We want to do all these things. And that's okay, except that how do you move forward in your sobriety journey if you're surrounded by people who are using? You can't do it. Yeah. It's absolutely insane to think that you can live in an apartment building full of meth and fentanyl users and that you're going to get clean somehow. Yeah. I mean, talk about lowering your odds of success. And the worst thing, I think, from my perspective, is that when projects like this fail and go bad, it reduces the opportunities for people who are actually on their journey, who are farther along, who are actually more ready.
Yeah.
You know, who really want to try. And it feels like we've got people in there who just really don't care. They just want a better place to camp.
And I've talked to a couple residents and over the years, and it's you know, those folks, they want to get out of there, you know, because they realize how destructive it's been mm-hmm. in their lives to be around it. And, you know, I talked to one guy who is, he's in his 50s or so, and he really wanted to get out of there. It's just, but you don't have a lot of options. Mm-hmm. And when you're in that position, and so, I get the sense that a lot of ways the people are beholden to the scenario, the situation,
to the system.
And they're afraid, you know, in some ways they're probably a little afraid to speak out mm-hmm. because, these folks control their housing, you know,
right.
Where are they going to go?
Yeah, no. And that creates an interesting scenario. You know, I had a mom call me up and, her daughter's in an apartment on vouchers. She's in active addiction. She has children. She moved in her, you know, drug manufacturing pusher boyfriend. You know, and this is not in 22 North. This is an unnamed apartment complex somewhere in Whatcom County. You know, and I get reports of that from apartment managers and other residents and all kinds of things saying, yeah, they move these girls in here on a voucher. The next thing you know, their boyfriend's dealing drugs out of the apartment. And, you know, we've got all this illicit drug traffic and stuff all around our kids. And it's already time for a break. This is like, I hate breaks. You're listening to Saturday Morning Live. I'm Lyle Sorensen, joined by Mr. Adam Bellinger, and we'll be right back.
Hey, it's Dave, and if you're like me, spring comes with a whole list of home projects. And if you're ready to jumpstart your kitchen remodel or upgrade your laundry room, well, DeWard & Bodie is ready to help with the best deals on home appliances. And right now, they have amazing ways to bundle and save. Like this, get up to $400 in cash back rebates on select LG and KitchenAid appliance packages. And up to $200 cash back on select appliance bundles from Whirlpool, Maytag, GE, Beko, and more. When you buy more, you save more at DeWard & Bodie. You also get the expert service and experience you can trust. Throughout April, you can save up to $100 on their professional delivery and installation when you buy select dishwashers and cooking appliances. It's spring clearance at DeWard & Bodie, and you can find one-of-a-kind deals on floor models and ding and dent items up to 50% off. Plus, pay no money down and no interest up to 2 years on qualifying purchases. It's only at DeWard & Bodie in Bellingham and Burlington.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. Go ahead, feel your engine. Admire that perfectly installed exhaust. Your vehicle's moving along this freeway like it was made from fresh installs and a whole lot of love. With eBay Motors, you get over 122 million parts to keep it running. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, they'll be the perfect fit every time. Plus at these prices, well, we're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Getting your biggest tax refund from Jackson Hewitt can lead to some spirited reactions.
Jackson Hugh, yeah!
Jackson Hewitt is so sure they'll get you your biggest refund that if they don't, you get your money back plus $100.
Jackson Hugh, yeah!
Switch to Jackson Hewitt and we'll beat what you paid last year, even if you filed online.
Hugh, yeah!
Ain't nothing to it. Switch to Jackson Hewitt and pay less for tax prep, guaranteed. Proof of prior year payment required when filing. New clients only at participating locations through April 7th. Terms at jacksonhewitt.com.
We'll be right back.
Welcome back to Saturday Morning Live. I'm Lyle Sorensen, joined today by Mr. Adam Bellinger. We're talking about permanent supportive housing and specifically 22 North. There's lots of problems, you know, and lots of elements that create problems. Adam, you're probably one of the people in town who's doesn't work for OPCO, who doesn't work at 22 North, but probably has the most background, and you know, you've really been looking at this for a while.
Yeah, and I, you know, whether it's looking at police reports or EMS calls and logs and you know, personal observations, and then looking at, you know, the model and looking at, you know, what has been working out there in this space. I started looking around and saying, you know, what are some ways we can offer up to make things better? So I had a number of ideas. I've been pushing these into our, you know, local elected officials, you know, trying to spur some action on it. And there, one of the main things, I think, you know, in this short run, there's kind of two things. One is you need like a kind of a timeout period, in my opinion. You need to look at security.
Yep.
You know, it's there's only two entrances to this building. You know,
shouldn't be that difficult.
Should be pretty easy to you know, have good security on there. There's been some reluctance because nobody wants to live in a police state. But I think in this particular situation, given the fact that last time I checked, there's about 175 people banned from the building.
Right. You know, somebody just texted me, and I don't want to get us down a rabbit trail, but this person said they see small children in front of 22 North. Are there kids living there?
There was at least one girl.
Oh my gosh.
One little infant, so probably a toddler now. There's other, you know, there's church groups. There's a Bay, theater group that's, you know, right across. I mean, there's
Is Northwest Youth Services still in the building?
Last I heard, they're no longer part of the property management. They do have a facility next door that was the home to the their teen shelter. And what's crazy to me is, you know, they were placing sex offenders right next door to their teen shelter.
So there's sex offenders in 22 North also.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, that's awesome.
But going back to the solutions piece of this, not only does security need to be beefed up, but I think...
Can you imagine being staff and not having, like, security?
Yeah, yeah. For some of the things that you're facing, you know, I listened to a 911 call, and it's like, I would want a security guard there to help me, you know, when I have somebody, you know, going through a medical issue, maybe somebody to let, you know, EMS and fire department in. So there's just a lot of those kinds of things that need to happen, I think, fairly quickly. In the long run, I think that the model of, you know, housing first paired with a studio apartment building doesn't really work, because when you're having people in there with addiction, they're just going to self-destruct if they're allowed to have their addiction, work itself over while they're in the privacy of a unit.
Overdose rates go up.
You've had essentially over 10% of the population of the building die within a span of, you know, 7-9 months here. So it's evident that there's something not working, and it's really wrong. Does the housing configuration work for that? And so I think in the long run, there does need to be addressing the configuration. I think that there needs to be more of a congregate housing model for this type of population. Excuse me. And I think you know, a good example of that is student housing. With student housing, you know, we have these, you know, kids who are, you know, fresh out of their parents, mm-hmm. you know, bedrooms at their homes, and they're going off learning to be independent on their own. This is a similar process that, you know, somebody coming off the streets are going through. They're having to relearn how to.
They need to be mentored.
And
guided and directed and have some accountability and some consequences. And, you know, we were talking during the break, you know, like if you lease an apartment, if you're not there on vouchers, you can't smoke tobacco, you can't smoke marijuana, you can't, you know, there's a lot of things that you just cannot do. And so, you know, why is this different, right? Why are we going to pay the bill for somebody and then just say, yeah, you know, it's all right. Go ahead. We're not going to require you to be abstinent in our building. You know, if we're not going to require abstinence, fine. Go away, go outside somewhere and do your thing, but not in our building.
Yeah, exactly. You know, if a student starts, you know, smoking meth in the dorm rooms, they're going to get kicked out of the dorms pretty quick. And it's not because, you know, they don't have a problem that, you know, they need help with, but you can't disrupt the whole rest of the the people who are trying to, you know, get their education and things like that. So I think it's a model that we can look at mm-hmm. towards making this sort of situation better. The other thing that needs to be addressed is meth testing. I don't necessarily feel comfortable with the Opportunity Council doing it themselves. Mm-hmm. I have some
conflict of interest.
I have a little conflict of interest, and plus there's, you know, it when you get meth contamination, you need to be state certified to remediate. And so I think that's certainly something that needs to be looked at.
Yeah, well, and I know that, you know, the Lummi Nation has been doing a fabulous job on really showing leadership on a lot of our drug issues. And that's a policy that they've really, really gone after, is testing their facilities. And, you know, they found some.
Yeah,
you know, here's the thing. I guarantee that 100% of the time you won't find what you don't look for.
Yeah.
Right?
And it's I really appreciated your interview with Nicholas Lewis.
He's amazing. He's a rock star.
Yeah, no, he's for those of you who aren't familiar with him, he's a tribal council member for the Lummi tribe. And, you know, he really is a good thought leader on this issue.
Well, and he's such a servant leader.
Yeah.
You know, he really gets in there and just works and gives and grinds and, you know, pushes hard positions, you know, things sometimes that don't follow maybe the harm reduction model entirely, or, you know, and I think we're in a position where we need, it's not this or that. And we have a this or that paradigm going on.
Yeah.
You know, where we've got two ends of the spectrum that are kind of diametrically opposed. And I think this is a big enough challenge that we need both. Yeah. We need this and that.
Yeah.
You know, and I think to your point, that's kind of what we're seeing from Nicholas a bit.
Yeah. And, you know, and there should be recognition here for the other side of this too, is, you know, I really appreciate all the work that, you know, the Opportunity Council does on a lot of different levels. But we need to have a hard conversation about this. And because we're not meeting the community's expectations, we're failing individuals. And we need to figure out a way to help those that are, you know, suffering the most out of all this. And it really is the underprivileged and underserved here.
Yeah. No, there are needs, you know. And I know that you're not cold and heartless. Neither am I, you know. But at the same time, you know, it's often kind of like having kids, right?
Yep.
You know, if you have rules in your house. And I know that you have some kids. I've heard them when we talked on the phone before. If you have rules in your house and you say, all right, guys, knock it off, and then nothing ever happens, if they know there are no consequences for their choices and their actions, what are they going to do?
Yeah, they're just going to keep doing what they're doing. And so there does need to be a change of path, I think, in this situation. And it should probably be very uncomfortable. And it's... I don't see any way around that. And
no.
and I do recognize that, you know, we are dealing with a very sensitive topic, and you know, there's a lot of good efforts going into this, but is it producing the results that we need for the scale of the problem?
You nailed it right there. You nailed it. You know, if we keep doing the same thing that isn't working and expect different results, I think that's the definition of insanity, if I remember correctly. Yeah. You know, and that's true, right? You know, and we have limited resources to work with. So we really need to hone in and become results oriented with our programs. You know, sometimes I think the measure of things is, does it sound good and does it make me feel better?
Yeah.
And if the answer to those two questions is yes, people just go for it, right?
Yeah.
You know, and the logic and the hard questions sometimes and the hard actions, because it sounds mean and it sounds, you know, whatever. It's like, look, we got to do what works.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, there's probably some harm reduction that happens along the way. There's probably a little bit of enabling that happens at some stage. But at some point, there becomes a shift in somebody's journey, and they need to start matching the efforts. Because you know what? If we want it for them more than they want it for themselves, it's not going to happen.
Yeah.
It's not going to work. We're going to be in the same exact place that we've been. Right?
Exactly.
I mean, yeah.
I feel like I've been banging my head against the wall, you know, over and over again on this.
You've been a warrior.
But I have a lot of endurance and I'm willing to just keep on chipping away at this problem, you know, because it's whether it's fentanyl or the housing crisis or any of these overlapping issues, they're coming for all of us, and we need to find a way to solve them together.
100%. Adam, thank you so much for joining us today. I can't believe it's already April. We got a lot of work ahead of us. You're listening to Saturday Morning Live. I'm Lyle Sorensen with Adam Bellinger. We'll see you next time.